back, guys. This is Dragos, and once more with another podcast. This time along, we have Moni Zhang on the podcast. Moni Zhang is another comedian based out of Berlin. She is originally from China, Wuhan, China. You might have heard of it, perhaps. And I had a chance to talk with Moni at her place with her two dogs. She has two really cute dogs. One of them is Shifu, and the other one is Panda. And he's from Macedonia, Shifu, so he's an Eastern European Balkan dog. Anyway, getting sidetracked. The point here is, so Moni has been doing comedy for about a year as well, and she won the best, the new comedy stand-up award last year in Berlin. And we talk a bit more about how was her experience coming from China to Europe, adjusting to the whole comedy thing, building up the courage as a person of color to do comedy, and talking a bit more about her goals and aspirations for the comedy career, as well as some struggles she's had with mental health and so on and so forth. Really fun chat. If you're watching this on YouTube, you're going to enjoy the dogs. The dogs are playing all the time in the background. If you're listening to this on Spotify or somewhere else, you will hear the dogs growl here and there, which is very cute. But onwards to the podcast. Please enjoy the podcast with Moni Zhang. And if you do enjoy it, do drop a subscribe, like, comment, you know, all the above. All right. Okay, it's working out. So good to see you. Good to see you, Moni. We're here at Moni's house with her, with Moni's dogs, Panda. And what's this dog's name, Moni?
This is Shifu. This is Panda.
Oh, Shifu, like Master Shifu?
Yeah, you watch the Kung Fu Panda.
Indeed, yes. You got Panda and Master Shifu here. So you guys can see them on the camera here. Mm-hmm. This is Panda and that's Shifu. Mm-hmm. And they're Moni's dogs. Moni, oh my God. Okay.
Not food,
yes. And Moni is our, she's our guest for today, Moni Zhang. Good to see you.
Shall I look there?
It doesn't really matter, I guess, whatever you want. So you can lay back or something. Okay. I think it's completely fine. But we have Moni Zhang here on the podcast today. Moni is from, you're from China, Moni, yes?
Yes.
You're also a comedian?
Yes.
Very good. And what is that behind you?
This is my trophy.
Okay, a comedian with trophies. Oh my God, can you guys see that? So what is the trophy for?
So last year, I think it's 2019, mm-hmm. I entered a comedy competition, mm-hmm. and I won the whole thing, and I got a trophy from it.
Very good, so congratulations. Was that the first edition? Oh my God, this dog bite me.
Okay, yes, cool. I'm the first winner of the first Berlin New Stand-Up Comedian Award.
Congratulations. Yeah. Did you expect to win when you joined?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Were you very surprised when you did?
The expectation keeps going up. Like when I started, I didn't expect I can win, but I was thinking, oh, what if it's nice? What if you can get into the next round?
Right.
And then I win the first round with the most votes, mm-hmm. and then I start to dream bigger. I was like, what if I can get into the final?
Okay.
And then I get into final, then I start to think, what if I can win?
Okay.
And then everything happened, and it was such a surprise for me personally. Yeah, it's because I'm from China, you mm-hmm. know, like it's very, they always tell you are not good, mm-hmm. And they tell you that you are not creative, they tell you that you are not innovative, mm-hmm. because that's how Chinese people are.
Right,
they
right,
tell
right.
you the only way you can win anything is to through hard working.
Right.
So when I started comedy, I just never knew I was good.
Right.
But I feel just very ashamed all the time. I feel, oh, everyone hates me. I'm Chinese and no one talks with me. My mm-hmm. English is bad mm-hmm. and there's cultural difference. And I didn't know if I'm funny, and
right.
I needed the recognition so much.
Right, and which is true. I think a lot of people. I mean, when I talk to people about why did they start a comedy, there's two reasons. Mm-hmm. People start comedy because they have a delusion that they're funny, or they're like they have this like big head or like this ego is so big that of course I'm funny, or somebody just confirms, gives them the recognition, right? Somebody says like, you should do stand-up.
Yeah.
And you're like, maybe, should I? And then they keep getting that until the point where you're like, maybe I should do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me as well, like, I think it was a similar reason, because mm-hmm. for me, I was like, you know, I always felt that kind of funny. Mm-hmm. But then until somebody asked me, do you want to do the, you know, because I was watching stand-up and Dave Chappelle and all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. But I didn't think, like, I can do this. Uh-huh. But until somebody said, like, look, we have an open mic here. Do you want to do it?
Oh, that's so cool.
You know, it gives you a yes or no kind of question. Then uh-huh. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do it. Uh-huh. Then no. Did you decide by yourself I'm going to do stand-up or?
Yeah, actually, it's a funny story mm-hmm. because coming from China, mm-hmm. I just don't know what stand-up is.
Right.
In recent years in China, there's some type things coming up, but right. it's not like the same thing.
Right.
And I left China 10 years ago, so in my mind, I never knew what stand-up is. And because my English wasn't good enough, I never had the chance or exposure to this art form.
Right.
I don't know what it is at all. Then mm-hmm. until I think 2 years ago, mm-hmm. I went to a comedy show, first time in my life.
Right.
It was actually around here, a small core.
Was it Lena's show?
Yeah, Lena's show.
The Last Stand.
Yeah, Last Stand. Yes. And I went there and I was with a Tinder date mm-hmm. because I was like, what can I do with a Tinder date? I'm so sick of all the things. Why not try something new?
Right.
And I went there. I just realized, wow, this is so cool. It's so cool because in my mind, I saw this kind of advertisement online a lot, but I was thinking, oh, stand-up comedy. Oh, I saw this kind of open mic. Sometimes in TV, they portray it as something super, super awkward.
Right.
And no one is funny.
Right.
And so I had no expectation. But right. that night, there were so many funny comedians. And I was like, this is amazing.
What the fuck, yeah?
Yeah. And the whole time I wanted to participate.
Right.
Then it just come into my mind and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And at that time, I was depressed mm-hmm, also. Mm-hmm. I was at home doing nothing. So I was like, why not try it?
Right.
Then in 2 weeks, I went to Lena's show to try it. And it was just amazing. It feels like a part of me has been awakened. Like the thing is like, now I understand so many things about me, mm-hmm. which I couldn't explain in the past.
Right.
People always complain me for I lie, for I exaggerate things, mm-hmm. and they always get mad, say, oh, she always makes things up. Now I realize I was doing stand-up. Right. I was just trying to tell a nice joke.
To entertain.
Yeah, to entertain, but people get mad at me. And now I realize why I always think about the same thing again and again, try to make it more funny. I was doing stand-up, but just no one knows I was doing it, and they are mad at me for doing it.
Right. Because they're thinking you're just kind of fooling around and just not taking things seriously, right?
Yes. And this is just so amazing. It was so addictive. I couldn't stop doing it. I just want to do it every night, every day, and it's just amazing.
Just the feeling on stage, right?
Yeah.
But how do you feel? Like, did you bomb the first time you did it, or what happened?
I did amazing.
You did amazing.
Yeah. I had like a group of friends.
Right.
Most of them, all of them are white guys.
Okay.
And most of them I met on Tinder.
Right. Okay.
And so I invite all of them to my show.
Right.
Sitting on the first row.
Right.
And I just roasted all of them.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And now looking back, the same video, I realized, oh, I was already doing lots of technique, but I didn't know.
Like, because a lot of them come subconsciously, you know, just in terms of like, it's just how psychology works, a lot of mm-hmm. the jokes, right? Like, set up punchline, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. How I was like diverting their, misleading their attention,
right.
then come back, have a callback, or
right.
this kind of thing. I realized, now I look at my first video, I was like, I was already funny on the first show.
Which is great, because like for me, I think, there was a bit of like when I watched some of my stuff afterwards, and I was like, oh my god, this is so bad. This is like where the fuck did I get the confidence to say this shit? Because like one of my first jokes on stage was like, you know, I usually come up here and I do a couple of masturbation jokes, mostly because they come easy. And everybody was like, but yeah, like for me as well, like I was doing a lot of jokes in my work, and I was just, but it was a lot of times it was just like very shock element jokes,
mm-hmm.
you know, like maybe they killed themselves or
okay.
that kind of jokes.
And then, you know, it's fun to kind of have for me it was like, okay, this is, because I usually like picked up like hobbies. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I'll do it for 3 months and I'm like, mm-hmm. I have no interest. But then like, this was the only thing I had an interest to do it like long term. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then so then you ended up just doing it consistently or yeah. You just started doing, did you do a class or anything?
I didn't do class at the mm-hmm. beginning. And what I did is I read lots of books mm-hmm. because I don't know this art form. I don't know who are the big stars.
Right.
By reading books, I got so many references. They have examples of who did an amazing job.
Right.
And then I just start to watch lots of things.
Right.
Because without those books, I will just watch the current ones on Netflix.
Right.
But I wouldn't know the history of the art form
and
who are the icons.
Right.
And it helped a lot.
Do you remember which books you read?
There are a few books. I think there's one called Serious Joke Writing.
Okay.
And there's a book called Comedy Writing or something.
Okay.
I think I don't remember a particular book being outstanding.
Right.
But I think aggregatively, they are just really.
That's just good kind of way to go about it.
Yeah.
And then, did you know any stand-up comedians, big stand-up comedians, before you did it for the first time?
No.
So you just went and you saw it, and you just went.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Because like I think for a lot of people, they know about like Chappelle or Chris Rock, all these other guys, and then like, oh, okay, maybe I can.
I didn't know anyone, like it's not in my culture.
And ever since then, did you kind of like, it's not in the Romanian culture either. Mm-hmm. Like for me, the first exposure I had to it was Russell Peters. Mm-hmm. You know Russell Peters, yeah?
Yes.
So I saw like he was really big on YouTube in 2010, 2009. Mm-hmm. So I saw those videos and I was like, huh, this is pretty interesting. I didn't know like these things about Indian and Chinese people, because uh-huh. you know he does a lot of stuff about like I was like, oh, I didn't know like Indian people and Chinese people, they're also cheap, because mm-hmm. like, you know, Romanians were kind of cheap as well, because poor, you know, it's cheap by necessity.
Yes,
and a lot of times people are cheapest because they don't have money. And that was kind of like the first introduction, but then mm-hmm. you know, Chappelle and all the other stuff, mm-hmm. and slowly kind of discovered more and more. Mm-hmm. But now that you've watched more stand-up comedians, do you have any favorite ones on your list?
Ali Wong is I think she's not only brilliant, mm-hmm. she's not only super funny, mm-hmm. but I love that she's just a role model.
Right.
She breaks so much stereotypes.
Right.
And so many things, people say you cannot do it. She did it.
It
was amazing.
Right.
She has such a strong personality.
Right.
And what I like about the comedy is that also, as a minority, ethnic minority doing comedy, you can use stereotypes, it always works.
Right.
You can use the stereotypes to build a powerful image, mm-hmm. or you can use it to beat down your people.
Right.
And she's using it to say, like, this is Asian, what's great about it?
Right.
And how, and using her strong personality to educate people.
Right.
Not just a stereotypical Asian woman who's timid and who's into all those traditional things.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was very interesting when I saw her as well. I was like, she's so, like, explosive, right? Mm-hmm. she actually had, like, she was opening for Chappelle for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So like Chappelle had like, Chappelle is very kind of open when it comes to like, you know, giving people opportunities, that kind of stuff. So Ali Wong was like opening for him for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when she kind of like also started like growing in her, the way that she did it as well.
Yeah.
And also like, I think the fact that you have access to that stage time, right? Like all those shows that Chappelle is doing all the time on the road really helps you get better.
Yeah. I want to ask you, you think did you go to Chappelle's show last year?
Yeah, I went to the first one and the second one.
The second one, the opening mic, the woman?
Not as good.
Not good at all. I was sitting on the second row, you know, like I almost jumped on the stage. I was like, if she can do it, I can do it. I'm way funnier than her. Why is her? And so do you know how to contact Dave Chappelle?
I mean, I don't, but usually I think what happens is he kind of takes people under his wing when they're not that great. And then, you know, they gives him the opportunity, the coaching, because he did basically that, like, there were a couple of people that were under his kind of tutelage, right? Mm-hmm. It was Ali Wong for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Then I think Trevor Noah for a bit. Mm-hmm. Then Mo Ammer.
Oh, he's amazing.
Mo Ammer. Then also, what's the other one? The lady, the red haired lady with the voice. Fucking, what's her name? You know what I'm talking about, right? Curly hair?
Pan Maria.
No. She's young, from New York. Curly hair. She used to be on the Daily Show.
I don't know.
She talks like this. You know what I'm talking about?
This the black lady?
No, she's white. She's red. She's
on
ginger.
On Daily Show?
Huh?
On Daily Show?
She was on the Daily Show before.
Oh, then I don't know.
It's okay. Wolf. She's.
Oh yeah, Michelle Wolf.
Michelle Wolf, yeah.
She's amazing.
Michelle Wolf as well, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, her like her new not new special, yeah. Last year's, yeah, special. She talked about a white woman in, yeah, the feminist movement. I was like, wow, this is gold.
So
this
then gold. All of these kind of like have been under the Chappelle kind of Chappelle comedy camp, mm-hmm, thing, tutoring thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, it's kind of like, so maybe this new girl as well will come out on top, mm-hmm, very very strong, right? Mm-hmm. But he kind of gives those kind of opportunities. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I first saw Ali Wong, I was like, this is, I think at that time, there was no female comedian that was like at the top of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, people say like Sarah Silverman or whatever, but like Sarah Silverman hasn't done anything proper in ages. Who? Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
yeah,
is great, but she hasn't done anything out that impressive in a very long,
yeah,
time.
Yeah, she's,
right,
a niche.
Yeah.
But Ali Wong is like, no, like everyone watched it. This,
yeah, exactly. It was so, it was, I think the thing that Ali Wong got really, really, really right was she was entertaining, you know. Mm-hmm. She was like very, very entertaining. I'm just keeping an eye on the camera because I have to restart it. Mm-hmm. But she was just watching her was very entertaining, right?
Yes, yes.
And I was like, okay, awesome. And then, and I think, did you also watch Ronnie Chang?
Yeah, yeah. I think he released his new special, mm-hmm, too early. He
too
needs
early?
To polish it work. Another year at least.
Yeah, I think I thought it was too much yelling.
You know, like I think that's the issue. I watched lots of specials, mm-hmm, from Daily Show people. Mm-hmm. I think they have lots of good technique,
right,
but you feel first it's kind of feel like an assembly line. They, right, have all the characteristics of a great special,
right.
But you don't feel a personal touch,
right.
personal touch, how they use it creatively in their way, but they just put the technique,
the own it, yeah,
yeah. And yeah. Another thing is I think they all release their too special
early.
Too early.
Yeah, I thought the same thing about like Taylor Tomlinson special. I don't know if you saw her.
No.
She has a lot of good technique, but doesn't come across like a lot of personality. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's great to see kind of all this type of representation. And I think, you know, again, with guys like Moamer and like Ali Wong, Moamer is...
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's but amazing. He's worked on that hour. He's been in the game like aggressively for so many years. Mm-hmm. And that hour is like so worked.
Do you know Weird Us?
Veer Das, yeah.
Like, I think, like, personality per se, Ali Wong is my role model for
right,
sure.
Right.
But the kind of comedy I want to do, I think, well, it's kind of like somewhere between Ali Wong and Veer Das.
Veer Das?
I really, really, really love his material. Have you watched the new one?
I haven't watched the new one, but I've been keeping an eye on him as well. There's
the new one for India?
No, I haven't watched that one.
I watched it so many times. It's gold. It's really gold. Like on his, he has 3 Netflix special,
right,
on Netflix. There's a first one,
right,
where he split the stage, half time in New York, half time in
right,
India.
Right.
It was so creative, right, and he also sing a song. His music skill is also really,
right,
really good.
He used to be a Bollywood actor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, before that.
And then the second Netflix special is kind of shitty.
Okay.
He released it way too early.
I think that's the one I saw. And
yeah,
I was
that
like,
one is.
Yeah, I think I was like, okay.
Yeah, but the. Go to see his first one,
right,
and the last one.
Right.
The one in between is...
It's not as good.
And I really, really like it is that there's one thing in his first show really, really worked. Worked for 2 minutes.
Right.
And then in the last special he did, he just made the whole show based on that format.
Right.
To the maximum. It's really good.
I mean, that's how you discover and you grow, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to check it out. I think it's great to see, like, for me... Especially being Eastern European, Romanian comedian. I mean, you notice that I've turned up the Eastern European in my comedy like quite high.
Yeah.
Because I figured, you know, that's the audience that is going to be my core base, right, at the start. Because I need some degree of connection with them.
Yes.
Until you kind of you grow from there for recommendations or other ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guys like Veer Das or, you know, Ali Wong or Trevor Noah, Russell Peters, they kind of fall into that category of outsiders to some degree, right? So you kind of like look at them to see how they've done it, to kind of try and model it. And then that's what I've done as well in terms of like, let's say especially recently, you know, I looked at like specifically Russell Peters and then Trevor Noah, because they're kind of like the only ones that broke out of the US into the US, where it's like the main center for it. And then I kind of analyzed their comedy and what they were doing that propelled them to that direction. And a lot of it was basically kind of appealing to the international audiences, you know, and using the cultural educational type of approach to kind of push the comedy.
I think comedy is really a great tool to educate people. And I think as performers, as artists ourselves, we really need to use it in the right way, not to punch down, not to reinforce all those stereotypes, but explain why there's this stereotype and explain our side of the stories.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's, I mean, that's what I did like in the in my first hour, where I talk about like the different kind of mentalities and what I'm trying to do now for the second hour is I'm trying to talk about like the inbuilt kind of mental blocks that you have coming from different these cultures, right? And I talk about how I have this this joke about, you know, in the different parts of the world have their different philosophies, right? In US, the philosophy is go, follow your dreams.
Yes.
In Asia, it's go, follow my dreams.
Yes.
Be a doctor, be an engineer.
Yeah.
In Eastern Europe, it's follow, no dreams. Because, like, again, nobody talks about dreams or, like, goals or that kind of stuff. It's you just shut the fuck up and you grind your teeth. You just deal with it.
That's so true, you know, like, when I was three, like, they already start to talk about... like being a nurse, being an accountant, and that's the kind of dream. When I was three or when I was five, they were already talking to me,
planting into you.
And when I was five, I tell you what my grandpa told me. My grandpa from my mom's side, he said, "Moni, you are so loud, and like no man would ever want you because you are so loud." And then I was like, yeah, then that explains. Now I have this memory rediscovered. I realized, of course, that's why for the first part of my life, I was so needy. I always want a guy. Always feel I'm not complete without a partner. I'm so low self-esteem because you told me that's the only dream I can have. So I focus on it so much, but I keep failing because when you want it so much, it won't happen. And the evil thing is that I was five. He told this in my mind. Make me believe that's the only dream I can have. Then immediately break it. Say, I will not make it. And how evil is that? How can I expect to grow up to be a confident, independent, and a happy person?
And a lot of times it's about the, when you go deeper into comedy, it's kind of like taking these inbuilt kind of lessons or like programmings and like deprogramming yourself, right? Because that was like your situation where like, you know, you have this. But then in my situation, like I think a lot of the conversation as that was when we were growing up is that we shouldn't dream of these things because we don't have money and we can't reach it. So then best not to dream at all. That was kind of the conversation. Because like, no, you don't want to, don't set your mind on that because then you're going to be disappointed, right? So then best not to have, not to want anything at all because that's the easiest way to avoid.
In China, it's very different. It's more about because we are poor. And in China, the it's very polarized society. So there's people who's underprivileged. Their whole life is about to achieve, to change your life.
To break out of
like,
it.
Change your life is everyone's motto. Like for at least a billion of people, that's their only hope in their life. But then there's people who's above average, then they have the privilege. It's way easier to live in that society than here because you get everything done so easily and you get a resource so easily and you just have the special rights. And so for majority of Chinese people I know, their whole life is about, oh, I need to work hard, I need to study hard, get into the university. Because in China, getting into the university is like a dream. It's really, really hard. And then find a job, get married, have children, buy a house.
Right.
And that's how I, like, we have dreams, but our dream is all related to money.
Right.
To measure by money.
To, like, material things.
Yes.
Yeah, whereas I think for us it was mostly like, just like, have enough to not die of hunger, then don't want more.
Like, really, like, were you joking, or was die of hunger was real?
No, I mean, not just not have to worry about the next day's meal. It was like, I think the general kind of, like, especially in my city, was like, you know, cover your basic needs, that's it. And then, you know, and then everything else is extra.
Okay.
You know, that was it. So then you don't need, but once you have that, then that's it. You just, that's the goal. Once you cover your basic needs, just chill, you know, watch TV, you know, play football. Just, there's no need to kind of want more. Or if you want more, if you want the things that are on TV, then you're going to be setting yourself up for disappointment, because those are not for people like us. Because we don't have access to those things, because we're not from America, we don't have the same situation. And it's kind of like you're just setting up yourself for failure if you want things outside of your reach.
Do you say this is that it's very normal for Romanian people, or is because your family was poor?
I think it's very normal for Romanian people in post-communist, because I think it's not just my family that was like relatively poor, it was like everybody, because communism, coming out of communism in Romania, everybody's kind of like on the same level, right? So then coming out afterwards, everybody was, especially with the post-communist kind of chaos in the country, nobody had like much anyway, right? So then the idea was like, we should all just, you know, just, but then you have the sudden influx of like riches on TV from America, but then they are so beyond your limits and your reach that you cannot comprehend how can you get from here to there, and wanting it is just you inflicting pain on you unnecessarily, because how the fuck are you gonna, you know, like watching MTV Cribs, it's ridiculous to want that kind of stuff, because there is no foreseeable path that you can get them. Do you know what I mean? So that was kind of the idea, is like, just, you know, just stay in your lane. You know, get a job and just have some kids and just enjoy. That's it, you know.
And do people in Romania compete with each other?
I mean, now it's basically the idea. Before it was like, it's more about, it was this, the incentive was like they're in communism to basically, you would get money if you tell the government if someone else was talking shit about the government, whatever, right? So then in that situation, everybody's always kind of looking in the other. So you want to have more than your neighbor. And if he has more than you, you don't necessarily want for you to succeed more than him. You want him to fail. You know what I mean? The goal is not for you to be more successful than him. It's for him to be less successful than you.
Don't you think wherever communism goes, disasters follows?
I mean, from what I've experienced. But yeah, I guess it's, I don't know, do you want to go into that topic?
I'm still a Chinese passport holder, yeah, so let's not talk about it.
About, yeah, this is a little bit of censorship for... But yeah, it's kind of like how it works out. So, you know, like after coming out of it, is like, how do you deal with all the psychological blocks that you have from that, right? And a lot of times I was talking to one of my comedian friends who's from Romania, and then basically he was saying that, I was asking, where do you want to have this comedy thing take you, right? And then he was like, you know, maybe one day I can be on TV and be like a, you know, like a, have like a bad guy part, or like drug dealer in some movie or whatever. And I'm like, your highest aspiration is to be a drug dealer in a Hollywood movie? To be the fucking negative character? What the fuck, you know what I mean? So the idea is you have this block where like, okay, this is the box that you can even aspire for. Like, you can't even think beyond that. It's like, bro, come on, it's your imagination. You know, be the main character, you know what I mean? Can you not be the main character in your fucking imagination? So this idea that these mental blocks even in your mind, right?
I like the joke you did about you were taking a shower and is that you imagine like your Oscar nominee, but you were prepared?
No, this is Pablo's. Joke.
Okay,
but
okay.
Again, it's very it's very similar background, right? Like Ukraine and Romania. It's the same thing. It's like it's just interesting that it's the same kind of mindset, because it's the same blocks, right? It's like even in my imagination I lose, right? You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck, I'm supposed to have complete control over my imagination and I can't imagine myself beyond a drug dealer. You know? So it's kind of like realizing that this is a limit that is imposed by the you know, exterior, and then kind of try to bypass it. So the same when I started doing comedy, I was like, you know, why can't I do this? And I think for me the big clicker was when I went to the US. I spent a bit of time in the US and I saw how unexceptional people were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking, they're just like normal people, not the kind of talk shit on the US people or anything, mm-hmm. but they're like, bro, I was like, what the fuck, I've spent, you know, I'm like 20 something, I've been to 30 countries, you know, I speak, I'm communicating with you in your language, which I had to learn,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you're still getting the sentence wrong in your fucking language, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what the fuck, why am I feeling so, why do I have a sense of inferiority when all these people are like a lot less competent than I am? So mm-hmm. that was kind of like a big kind of like confidence boost and mm-hmm. Internal confirmation from external confirmation from that I, you know, that I can, you know, I'm better, not better, but like I can be better than what my mind limitations are, right? Because you look around, it's like, okay, what the fuck, these guys are like not that great, you know, mm-hmm. you're have this idea of like a lot of people from the West being so exceptional, mm-hmm. so amazing,
and yeah.
You know, that's what I'm trying to do in my mm-hmm. second hour now. I'm trying to talk about like how, you know, even my parents, they, when I was going to the UK, they're like, you know, you gotta watch out, you're going into the civilized world now, mm-hmm. Dragos, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of, you know, you have to act, don't act out, don't embarrass yourself when you go mm-hmm. into the civilized world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go into the civilized world and everybody's embarrassing themselves, right? You know what I mean? Everybody's acting illogically. They're spending money on nonsense. They're over drinking, especially in university. They're vomiting. That when I was in the UK, people were like sleeping in vomit on the student accommodation where I was at, and I was like, what the fuck? You know, these are the people. These are these elements. These gigantic, unreachable people that I've been told about, where they're sleeping in their own fucking vomit. So I was like, oh, okay, well then maybe I should reassess my view of the world and I can actually do more than I thought I could. So that's kind of like, that was the big kind of wake up call for me.
For me, it's actually different. It's a funny story also.
Yeah.
I started in the Netherlands,
okay.
For my bachelor. I had to quit, like it's a very complicated mm-hmm. situation when I was in China. So anyway, I did a study, but mm-hmm. there's no way I can switch to another study.
Right.
Without going back to high school.
Right.
So at that time, I was extremely depressed. I wasn't happy. So I went to Netherlands to do my bachelor again, mm-hmm. another bachelor. So I was 21 years old mm-hmm. at that time. But in Netherlands, there's the government incentive people to finish their study as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So most of people finish their master's study like 21 or 22 years
right,
old.
Right, right.
And I was 21 when I started my right. bachelor. All my colleagues were like 17, 18.
Really? Fuck.
And
the master's?
Bachelor.
Oh, bachelor, sorry. Yeah.
I lived through, I was 21 to I was 24. So mm-hmm. in those 3 years, they called me old lady.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were like, and they were like making rumors say, oh, she's already like 25 years old. She's so old. And I feel just so ashamed for my age.
The Dutch people?
Yeah, international people and right, the Dutch right, people. Right. And they are all like business school people, so right. very privileged.
A lot of them assholes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then they have this kind of, they all watch this, what's the name? Really, really popular American TV show.
Gossip Girl?
Yeah, Gossip yeah. Girl. They were all like behaving like this and showing off like how many hookups they did and just hang out to gossip about the other people. And I feel so not fit in.
Right, right, right.
And I feel so frustrated.
Right.
But instead of saying I can do better, I kind of feel, oh, I'm a loser, I'm socially
right, right,
awkward.
Right, right, right.
And I feel so horrible about myself the whole time when right. I was in Netherlands.
Right.
But I didn't know better. I didn't know, oh, it's their fault. I thought it's my fault.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how you kind of like self-impose this kind of thing. I mean, for me, it was a good kind of opportunity that, because I didn't hang out with a lot of British kids when I was in the UK. Mm-hmm. I hung out with a lot of international students.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had, like, you know, people from Peru, people from, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, okay, a lot of similarities. You're all guys, you're poor, you eat llamas, we eat cows, you know, it's the same kind of fun. But the British kids, like, in the law school, like, we never kind of connected because...
You did law school?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But we never kind of connected because they had different kind of... priorities. Their priorities was to drink because they were not having access to alcohol. They wanted to drink at the party. And then like in Romania, you can drink from like, you know, 12, 13, whatever the fuck, right? Nobody gives a shit.
Yeah.
So like, I didn't really need to, didn't want to like spend all my money drinking. And you know, they had like these unlimited funds that they would spend out all night in the clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, we don't have any common ground, you know, to be friends on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had no interest in being friends with foreigners. So I was like, all right. But then I found out my whole group of friends that was international, and then we just, you know, hung out with other international people, like Bulgarians.
Oh, that's so
like,
cool.
So that was all good because we had this whole international crew, and we were all kind of like in the same boat. But with the British kids, never quite connected, to be honest. Yeah, Malaysia, one of my best friends is Malaysian. But with the, and even now, like, that's why I didn't want to stay in the UK. I was like, there's no, fuck, there's no point here. And at the time when I left the UK, you already had like this wave of like anti-Romanian sentiment.
Why?
Because there was basically the UK started blaming like immigration from Romania, Bulgaria for like people stealing jobs and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the far right movement started up and they were like, you know, there was a documentary on BBC called The Romanians Are Coming. And they were like following people, documenting people that moved from Romania to just claim benefits in the UK. So there was this anti-Romanian sentiment going on. I was like, what the fuck? If I'm, you know, I have like freedom now, you know, I'm going to work here and work for your government and pay taxes here when you guys are clearly shitty and you don't want me. Fuck, I'm going to go do something else, right?
What made you to decide to move to Berlin?
I mean, Berlin, I wanted to, Berlin, I specifically moved for comedy.
How do you know it's a good place for comedy?
Well, basically, I, you know, I had, so I was working in sales before, so I set up like a spreadsheet with, because I, you know, in sales, you have KPIs, right? Key performance indicators that kind of determine your success. Just by a number. So I was like, what are my KPIs for comedy? And I came to the realization that the number one KPI for comedy would be stage time. So I just, I wanted to optimize for more stage time. So I did like a spreadsheet with all the open mics in English in Europe. And then when I got to Berlin, just searching on Facebook. Obviously, UK was number one, but then surprisingly, Berlin was number two. And then I came, checked it out. I saw the cost of living is low, much lower than Berlin, than London. So then I just moved here because I could get access to the stage time much faster than I would be able to get in London. Because I had friends in London. And first of all, it's so difficult to get around. It's so big. It's so expensive. And even though you're doing comedy, it's such a big market. And you're going to have to wait in line to get access to the clubs and that kind of stuff. Just to get on stage, get a good stage time, it's going to be like, it's going to take like 3-4 years of struggling. Whereas here, I came, just dropped in. The audience was full. Did like 4 mics in a week. I was like, what the fuck? I don't want the scene of the UK. I want the stage time because that's the thing that matters, right?
Yes, yes.
So then I came here for the stage time. I started doing stage time, boom, boom, boom. The plan was to basically start touring once I finished my hour in June 2019. It took me like 3 months to finish my hour.
How did you plan your hour?
I kind of basically ended up reading a couple of script writing books. There's this book called Story by this guy called Robert McKee, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And it basically, I wanted to basically put it on the hero's journey type of storyline. And like how movies are kind of set. So I just did it like that. So yeah, you can recommend the book afterwards if you want to read it. But basically, I use that story format. I use that, you know, have like a couple of emotional hooks here and there. And yeah. Did that, then I trialed it out. I knew you could do these kind of shows around Europe because some other guys are doing the different formats with Facebook ads. So I was like, you know, I know Facebook ads. I can learn Facebook ads. It's not rocket science, you know. I worked in tech. I can figure this out. So then I did a couple of shows. I did the first show in Bratislava in Slovakia. And everything self-planned, self-promoted. I had 23 people. And I made 30 euros profit. And I was like, okay, this is a win. But then again, the external confirmation, the second show I did was in Copenhagen, and basically I spent 80 euros on ads and I made 1,000 euros profit. Second show ever with 120 people. I was like, what the fuck? You know, like literally it blew my mind. I was like, what the fuck? Nobody knows me, but there's still 120 people here. And then I kind of analyzed why is that. And then, you know, the common denominators are there's a lot of non-Danish speaking people that are expats in Denmark. They don't have any forms of entertainment in English. And just by putting English stand-up, it was solving a pain for them that was so high that they just came, even though they didn't know who I was, right? And also, I sold the tickets pretty cheap. I sold them at like 9 euros. And for Denmark, that's super cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
So they just sold 120 tickets. So then I was there and I was like, what the fuck? So then I did my 1 hour for the second time to 100 people. And then it was like, what the fuck? I can definitely make this work. You know, once you work for 1 hour technically a night and you make 1,000 euros, I was like, I just need to replicate this for all the other shows. So that was the big kind of like, you know, aha moment. And then just push. So then I pushed, and then, you know, obviously some of them didn't work out. But anyway, long story short, by the end of the long tour, I ended up kind of just making a bit of money. Broke even mostly, but make a bit of money. But I traveled over Europe and I made a bit of money on top, right?
Yeah.
Which is a great win.
And then, the stage time.
Yeah, it's the stage time was incredible. Like, because that's what I was thinking. Like, that's why I wanted to do 1 hour. Like, how am I ever going to be able to get to the Louis C.K. level of expertise in stage time? Or like the other guys, when this guy's doing a 1 hour show every night, right? And I'm doing like, because I have a spreadsheet where I track all my stage time. I'm doing 200 minutes of stage time a month, and that's amazing in Berlin. But this guy's doing 2,000. You know, what the fuck am I going to get to that level? So then I started doing that, and I did 2,000 in a month, because I did 20 shows in a month once. And then that was the plan. So basically, in last year, in 2019, the ultimate cherry on the top was basically getting to open for Jim Gaffigan. You know, like doing comedy like full-time for 1 year, and opening for Jim Gaffigan, who was... Emmy nominated 5 times with Chappelle, lost to Chappelle, Trevor Noah. But
I love him. Yeah, he's, you know,
was
brilliant.
On the same fucking podium with these guys. That's what the fuck, you know? So at that point, it's like, and then I think I was telling this to Rob because I did the podcast with him. I was like, the biggest kind of like external recognition was that when I went and I met Jim Gaffigan, I was telling him like, look, this is how I plan on starting my set. I'm going to start with like, I'm from Romania. Romania is kind of like the Mexico of Europe. And then he said, yeah, they tried to build a wall, we stole the bricks, ha ha ha. So Jim Gaffigan finished my joke, and I was like, what the fuck? Because I sent him the audition tape. But then from the audition tape, he remembered the end of my joke, and I was like, what the fuck? Clearly, I have something good if this guy remembered the joke. Because, you know, remembering a joke is not easy, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, then he must have liked the joke enough to remember it. So I was like, okay, this is ultimate confirmation, this is what I'm doing from now on, 100%.
You mean comedy?
Yeah. Yeah, so then that was kind of, and then obviously afterwards, 2020 came, and.
But now you're popular online.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to grow the online stuff, and I realize more and more that the online medium is the way to go. You know, whether it's podcast or like, you know, sketches or YouTube, that's it gets you a bigger audience faster, and you know, it can also generate money without having to, you know, while you're doing nothing basically, because it's like passive income because people are just watching your videos. But it's also it's a different skill set because, you know, it's and it's kind of taken away from like writing stand-up at the moment, but it's a necessary kind of, I think it's a it's definitely affecting the quality of my comedy because I don't have as much time to practice, but then I can't and write.
But do you feel it's also a very good, how do you say, stimulation? For example, you talk with different people, you start to... it primes you different ideas.
And I think you cannot, it's not gonna prime it on the spot, but I think later on when you go for the information, you're like, oh, okay, well, this, I remember this Moni saying this or whatever, and you can draw different kind of elements. So it's definitely value, you know, but it's more long-term kind of investment, right? So I think like, you know, I'm sacrificing short-term kind of joke quality or joke writing for like hours of editing. I'm building long-term long-term value because you know, the assets and the snowball effect of YouTube and whatever, right? So yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment, and I was telling you, now I'm up to, if you're watching this in the future in 2030, I'm up to 5,000, almost 5,000 subscribers on YouTube. Let me know how many do I have now. But you know, 5,000 is also very impressive considering at the start of the year I had like 1,000, so it's like, you know,
it's really impressive.
Yeah. So, but it's also a lot of work. I'm posting in Reddit. I'm posting in Facebook groups. I'm getting banned
the
from Facebook groups.
First 10,000 is the most difficult.
And it's halfway there. But yeah, and afterwards, basically, once you have that platform, then you can use it to kind of push some other people as well up, right?
How do you find your direction where you want to go? Like, for example, podcast, what's your topic and what's your scene? Like, how do you figure it out?
I mean, I don't know, to be honest. Cause, I mean, this is what the problem with the top podcast at the moment is. I'm talking to people about different kind of things. It doesn't have any particular target. You just have to see what works. Well, you just, you know, try different things, and if one pops up, then do more of that, you know.
Like Uncle Roger.
Yeah, exactly. Do different things, and then if one pops up, then we'll do more of that. So I'm not sure exactly what's going to be the one that's going to pop up, but you know, that's why I'm doing like on YouTube now. I'm doing all kinds of like stupidish things, like reacting to TikToks, you know, reacting to Donald Trump losing, reacting to, you know, Russian dash cam videos. Or like, I'm gonna try to do like a commentary thing as well on like, you know, K-pop, is it for me? You know, this kind of things, and see what sticks. And then try to do some more like, you know, maybe like social issues as well. Like, so universal basic income, is Romania ready for it? You know, this kind of like, I'm thinking in clickbaity titles now.
Your work ethic is really respectful.
Yeah, and it's because I'm, you know, I think it's different because you're working for your future. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not working for like a company.
Yes.
You're not working for, you know, you're going to claim the benefits of your work. There's no...
How much money you saved before you say, oh, I can try this out?
I had enough to kind of keep me for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like not, I mean, obviously not living in like, you know, living in shared house, you know, low cost, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not eating lavishly or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you don't need it. Like a lot of times, like, you know, especially when I got like my apartment, I got it with my apartment with this other guy, and I had to buy the furniture, and mm-hmm. it's not the best kind of setup. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking I'm not going to be here most of the time anyway, because I'm going to be
touring.
Exactly, doing comedy. And even now, like, it's the same. I'm at the co-working space most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of like compromise in different areas, mm-hmm. but then long term, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be...
Yeah, my dream is to not do a corporate job in 3 years.
In 3 years? I mean, once you set the goal, you can start working towards that, right?
Yeah, I'm already... I can start work from now, but the mm-hmm. thing is, as a Chinese passport holder,
yeah.
I still have roughly maybe... I'm already eligible in 1 year,
yeah,
but
right.
It takes up to another year for me to get a German passport.
Right.
Without the freedom of speech, it's hard, and also living with the fear that I can get fucked up just by one joke.
Right.
It's really scary.
Right.
And also, like, my family is really poor.
Right.
My mom borrowed lots of money to support me get education.
Mm-hmm.
I still have lots of debts to pay.
Return, yeah.
At least 2 years more.
Yeah. Yeah. So. You have to kind of figure out a balance, right?
Yeah.
Like, for example, with the jokes and the freedom of speech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I can recommend is you can just work on your... the thing is, if you work on the joke structure and you can joke about normal things,
yes.
you know, then you can leverage the audience you build with
yeah.
normal jokes to mm-hmm. kind of get an audience and then tell them that, right?
Yeah. But I totally agree. I can already work more like on it. That's my plan. Actually, I made the realization very soon that mm-hmm. A corporate job is not for me.
Yeah.
And I really, really want to work as hard as you are.
Mm.
Maybe not possible, but 80% of the motivation you put in, and to see like 2 years later when I get the German passport, when I don't need to pay money to my family anymore, I can live a cheap life and to see if I can work this out.
I mean, the best advice I can give you is like just write good material.
Mm-hmm.
If you write good material, that's gonna get the foot in the door, right?
Yeah.
Because if you have like one solid hour of comedy,
mm-hmm.
and again, it doesn't necessarily have to be political. You can talk about personal stuff. You can talk about, you know, what the challenges of having a dog, you know, mm-hmm. the challenges of having a French boyfriend, the challenges of this kind of stuff. People relate to it, right?
Yeah. So next year I'm going to produce for mm-hmm. a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver Sotra.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to produce his European tour,
mm-hmm.
Do all the marketing, mm-hmm. all the producing, mm-hmm. booking all the venues, mm-hmm. and open for him.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter if I get any money out of it, I just want to have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then the year after, I want to do my own European tour and to see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, this thing is the stuff that we're building at the moment with the propaganda stuff as well. You know, if it goes well and you have the material, maybe happy to put you on the list. Maybe maybe if you want to get like, you can do like a shared hour with somebody.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and even before, like the deal I had with some people before, for example, with like Kat or some other people, you know, if you ever want to come and open for me in a place,
mm-hmm.
just come and open, let me know.
Let me know. Yeah. Like I really can be a Chinese labor. Like
yeah, like chances are, like for example, the thing I did with I think Kat and I think Gordon and I think Daniel and Justin was like, you know, most likely I won't be able to pay you depending on how big this the thing is. Yes. But if you just want to come and cover all your costs and just open, by all means, you know, no problems. So we had Justin that came and did that in a couple of places, Daniel Olel, you know, because people want to perform in different places and, you know, they don't have an hour, but they want to do a show in Hungary, they want to do a show in... So the same deal if you want to... And obviously, if there's money, you have to, happy to kind of also give you some. You know, happy to kind of facilitate as, on my side as much as possible. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, once you have the platform and the reach, then you can start, you know, getting other people. Like, for example, with the podcast or other stuff, right? If I have 100,000 followers and I have a conversation with somebody that, you know, with yourself or someone else, and people kind of follow you from there, I have nothing against that, right? Because it helps you guys, it helps everyone else, and long term, everybody wins, right?
Yeah, that's what I really, really, really respect from you, that you are never trying to hide, trying to make it your game, but you always invite people and collaborate and ask other people to invest more time, do different projects. You are trying to build the thing. And to be honest, like before you joined the game, I think it was just very hard to imagine like anyone can really make it, because we have so many comedians like with 10 years times and 5 years time, extraordinary comedians, but there's just no money in it. And you came into the scene, you totally changed the game, and now we all know there's a hope. And we can make it.
It gets a lot of money. The thing is, it's the problem is that I saw is, again, it's two different opposing sides of the brains, right? Because one side is like very analytical and very like, you know, operational. And the other side is creative, right? So a lot of people don't want to go into the creative side. And it's so much work on the operational side, right? Like, I was telling somebody before, like, you know, like, people come to the shows and they're like, oh, it must be so great, you know, it's so easy to just come and show up and just do it. Bro, do you think I just show up and do a show? Like, during the day, like, I'm at the hostel or, like, some hotel or whatever, and I'm working, I'm posting in groups, I'm sending emails to, like, university Erasmus coordinators. Oh, you guys, there's a couple of Erasmus students here, they don't speak the language, it's a comedy show.
With all the marketing you do, you have some system to track what you are doing?
I mean now not as much, but I have now I have some automation in my mind, but it's still, I'm doing manually a lot of stuff. But, you know, that's how you do it, right? That's how you have to do it. It's manually. That's why the barrier to entry is... The barrier to entry and succeeding in Europe as a comedian is just a lot of hard work. And you might be like, oh, anybody... No, it's a lot. You don't understand. It's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it is.
Like hours and hours and hours of like mind-numbing like hard work.
And the one thing I really, really respect you is that after every show, you talk with the audience. And all of them, like, we all know, like, statistically per se, like, one, there are some assholes, there are some weirdos, but you talk with them Netherlands and make them have a good time.
Yeah, because the thing is also, like, the idea is, like, you know, I want to be here, right? This is not, like, people like it's like a job or, like, you know, I'm doing this to be able to do this, right? Like, all the other work so I can hang out with the people. And I found out more about them. Why did they come to the comedy show? Where did they find out? And you also do a little bit of data mining, you know? And you get them to follow you on Instagram.
What do you do when you start to talk with an audience and you realize it's really weird and you don't feel comfortable? How do you end the conversation?
I mean, all right, see you later, man. So yeah, good stuff. Yeah, that's it. Just cut it abruptly. Okay, cool. I got stuff to follow me on Instagram. And usually when they, we just go to follow me on Instagram, and then basically they're like, yeah, I'm going to follow you. And then I just push, follow me now. Yeah, just give me your phone, I'll follow you. And then they're like, they pull back. So I become weird, basically. I out-weird them. All right. Do you have any other topics you want to go about? I think we're kind of reaching 1 hour now. We can do a part two. I think we have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
We can do a part two as well if you want. But if you have any questions or any closing comments?
Closing comments? Not really. I am just very happy with the conversation we have. And I feel that there's a chance, like, not only me, but anyone in the scene who's really ambitious and have a work ethic like you do, it's possible.
I think the first step is decide that this is for you. And, you know, you are now a comedian, and I'm going to be a comedian going forward. Once you make that decision, then things kind of like, you know, you force yourself into that direction.
What do you mean the decision? I don't really
like know. You have to kind of identify that I'm a comedian and I will be successful as a comedian, you know. Mm-hmm. You have to self-identify as a comedian.
You mean, of course, I self-identify as a comedian.
A career comedian.
Yeah. I think that's the three.
That's You say like, okay, I am a career comedian, and you know my career is at the start.
I think it kind of feel like.
So then you ask yourself, what would a career comedian do? Well, maybe he would start a podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe he would write more jokes. Maybe he would go to. Maybe he would set up a meetup group for career comedians. You know, I did like meetups for like joke writing throughout the summer, right? Last year, not this year.
Mm-hmm.
And people were coming, and there were like random people coming there, and they were like, and then I was helping them write jokes because I'm a comedian. I'm trying to write jokes. I need inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you know. What do career comedians do, you know, in their free time?
What made you to make this mental switch?
Like, I think I just really didn't want to. I was very unhappy where I was in my current corporate place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there's no point doing this. If I'm going to continue doing this, I'm going to kill myself.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. Yeah, I really would kill myself if not thinking in 3 years.
Yeah, so then I was like, well, I need to kind of start making steps towards that direction. So I was like, okay, I got to save money and I got to do this and then do it, try it for a year full time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after a year, reassess, see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after a year, it's like, okay, yeah, this is progress. I can do it for more and more 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's the point. It's like, yeah, again, it's like a lot of times it was rejecting of the present. I was like, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, and then the question was, I think the only obsession was always like, I mean, I remember the process correctly. It was two elements. I was basically, the question was, me, the question, the kind of like the Eureka moment was, I was making pretty good money in my previous job.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, I had quite a lot of savings. So the question was like, why am I still coming to work?
Mm-hmm.
And then in my back of my mind, the answer was like, well, you need money. Mm-hmm. How are you going to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked myself, if I didn't need money, let's say, what would I be doing? Mm-hmm. If I, because I'm doing this job for money, no other reason.
Yes.
If I wouldn't be in this constant trap of money, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer, I was do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, well, I have enough money to not worry for a year. Mm-hmm. Why the fuck don't I just do comedy? So then, and then I was like, where do I start?
Mm.
How do I know if I'm good enough? How do I know like if I even have it, right? So then what I did was like, the Edinburgh Fringe was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
This was like 2017 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Edinburgh Fringe was coming up. And I was like, look, I'm going to go to Edinburgh Fringe. I'm going to work remotely from there for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to my company and stuff. They're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And let me, you know, compare myself with the people here. Because
mm-hmm.
this is like the conglomeration of all the comedians.
Yes.
And, you know, this is like the Mecca, right?
Yes.
So I went there and I was like, okay, I'm not at the bottom because there's some people here that are really shit, but I'm not at the top, but I'm in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I'm in the middle with like what? I'm doing 2 free open mics a month now because that's how much I was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the middle with this little stage time, there where, how much faster and how much better can I get with actual stage time?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, this is realistically, I can be a lot better. I can get to the top 10%, top 5% if I really work hard.
How do you know where you are? Like, it's really...
Trust me, when you go to the Fringe and you see these people doing their shows and you see these people with the big posters and you go to the shows, you're like, okay, I'm over it. I'm at this level. Because at the Fringe, there's so many shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many shows.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to all of them, you go to some of the paid ones, you're like, okay, this guy's not that far.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the same situation with what you did, what you said with Chappelle's opener.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, okay, I can be on that stage, you know?
Yeah.
If she's, or like whatever, not to put that person down or anything, but like if that person is opening for Dave Chappelle, I can do it as well, right?
Yeah. I'm now start to feel it like this.
Yeah.
At the beginning when I do comedy, I doubt myself more.
Yeah.
It's because just no one in my life, they believed I'm funny. When I wanted to do comedy, I told my a few friends, some of them said, are you sure? Are you even funny?
I mean, I think the problem here is you don't... First of all, this is how I solved that problem. Yeah. I don't have friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of times, I mean, I don't ask life advice from people. Like, what the fuck? What kind of life advice on following your dreams can someone give me that they're still trapped in the rat race, right?
Yeah.
You know? So like I automatically discount it. It's like asking advice on how to paint a building from somebody that, you know, is a software developer.
Mm-hmm.
they might not know what the correct paints are.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ask advice on how to cook Cordon Bleu mm-hmm. from somebody that, you know, just fishes constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So these opinions are automatically, they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I kind of learned early on not to listen to people, to basically ignore people that have literally no idea what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then, you have to make an informed decision. You know your comedy better. You know the reaction. You know, there's no, in cut, that's the democratizing thing about comedy. People can say whatever the fuck they want.
Yes.
But you know what's in there, right?
Yeah.
When you do the joke, the feedback is immediate. They're either laughing or they're not laughing.
Yeah, it's nothing, like it's nothing you can lie about.
Yeah, there's no, it's pure, because it's, again, it's like a reflex, right?
Yeah.
And this is what I was telling people, like, when we were in the competition for this, I think there are a couple of people in there, and they're, like, very confident. I was like, guys, you got to watch out for Moni. Because mm-hmm. Moni has, like, her initial reaction to her jokes is just so explosive that it's mm-hmm. difficult to... I don't get that kind of reaction from my jokes, right? And I've been doing for so many years. That's what I was telling them. And then they were like, yeah, but da, 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 whatever, right? And yeah. then, well...
yeah, that's my issue. You mean, after the competition, I really feel everyone hated me. And then I heard so many stories about how people don't believe it, how they think I bought the audience, and how I manipulated everything, and how I cannot be a good comedian while not even speaking the language properly.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, they want to blame it on other people, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I was telling them, look at the reaction of the audience. Like, if you, like, whatever jokes you have, you do not have the same reaction that the people have at their joke. I don't know what's happening with Moni's comedy or what, why, but it's just eliciting a reaction from the audience mm-hmm. that is so explosive, right? The mm-hmm. contrast, and I broke it down to the fact that it's such a strong contrast of opposites mm-hmm. of, like, you know, being such a, you know, shy persona with, like, the ridiculous thing that you're saying. That it's so strong that it's just the brain of the audience cannot compute uh-huh. and they react to laughter, right? It's such an explosive, natural reaction that it's difficult to compete with it. And it's obviously in its first time reaction. If you've seen your stuff before, which like with everything with any other stand-up, right? Mm. If you've seen it before a couple of times, it's not gonna be as strong. But the first time, like if no one's ever seen it before and it's the first time, it's so explosive. Mm. It's just so, I guess like so opposing things, right? Clash together. And it's like so explosive that it's tough to compete with.
You know, like before comedy, like I just never believed I'm good at anything creative, and then comedy gave me, it's like, oh, now it all makes sense. Yeah. What creative means?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, you just do this and you do that, and it makes sense.
To give you an example, I had a guy who sent me a message recently. And then basically the message was like, you know, a lot of comedians, they say my material is hacky. This is the guy. I do a lot of cultural jokes. He's from Bulgarian guy who was performing in Denmark. Mm-hmm. He's like, I do a lot of cultural jokes and differences about...
You mean you or him?
Him. Mm-hmm. But it kind of applies to me as well, right? He was saying like a lot of my material comes across hacky. Because he's also Eastern European. He does a lot of... comedians, I've told him it's kind of hacky, right? Mm-hmm. And...
what hacky means?
Hacky, well, it's like easy. Mm-hmm. And I told him, look, don't listen to comedians, mm-hmm. especially unsuccessful comedians, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're just, they have an idea of what comedy should be like. Or these guys are like, oh, comedy should be this or should be that. Bro, mm-hmm. kill yourself. All these people with opinions of what comedy is or like the moral standpoint. Mm-hmm. The only thing that matters is the audience. Mm-hmm. Is the audience laughing?
Yeah.
Then you're doing your job. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what the comedians. You want to be a guy that makes jokes for comedians? You know what? Comedians don't pay for tickets. This is true, you know? You have so many comedians that have these ideas of like what comedy should be like mm-hmm. and they're still performing at open mics.
Yeah, maybe that's why they are not successful.
Yeah, so maybe these comedians should shut the fuck up.
Stop
giving their opinions and start selling some tickets and maybe they can have an opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, like the first moral boost I got from this to really know actually I'm really good is from Oliver Sotra.
Yeah.
Like he's like a crazy guy. Like after my first ever gig, Tyrone was there,
right.
And Oliver was there, and then Oliver started to act like a crazy fanboy.
Yeah.
And wherever I go, he's like, "Oh, I love you! Yeah. You're so good! Yeah. You're so funny!" And I was like, "Who's this creepy guy?" Yeah. And then I started to look him up, and then I realized he's a very experienced comedian. I was like, oh, if he says this, then probably I have something really good in me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, take advice from people that know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, because like, if some, it's like, again, if some random guy, like for this Bulgarian that I was telling, if some random guy was doing an open mic in Denmark has his idea of what comedy is like.
Yeah.
If he was really that good, he would not be some random fucktard giving you this advice, right?
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, that's my advice for you as well. Like, just, you know, if the audience is laughing, it doesn't matter. And I've heard Bill Burr, Louis C.K. say the same thing. Mm-hmm. When they scrap a whole hour, they just go on stage, they say the hackiest shit, they say the simplest thing. It doesn't matter as long as it gets a laugh, right? Mm-hmm. Because if it gets a laugh, then they get an opportunity to try stuff, you know, to try their new stuff. And that fails, and then, you know, whatever.
Yes.
So that's, you know, as long as the audience is laughing, and then obviously afterwards, a step from that is like, if people are still paying for tickets, then you're doing the right thing.
Shall we wrap this up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Yeah. So that's it, guys. Thanks a lot for watching. Follow Moni online.
Yeah, Moni Zhang Comedy.
With a Z-H, I'm going to put it in somewhere.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
But thanks a lot for being on the podcast. Thanks for your dogs as well, who have now tired of eating my arms.
Yeah.
Panda and Shifu.
Let's have dinner.
And we'll have dinner,
Do part one.
Okay, bye-bye. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Dragos, straight from the stage. Wanted to thank you a lot for watching this video. If you guys did enjoy the video, please do subscribe, like, and comment. And also watch some of my other videos. I've got a bunch of videos throughout this whole channel, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Thank you, and see you in the next one.